The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, it's a Friday. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at 3 o'clock Eastern at NicoleSandler.com on this Friday before Labor Day. Yes, weekend's the unofficial end of summer, and, well, here in Florida, we're on hurricane watch. Yeah, welcome to the show. There's a lot going on today. It's sort of like a confluence of different things. First of all, as I mentioned, obviously, I'm in South Florida, and we are under a hurricane watch. We expect it is now Hurricane Dorian. It's out in the Atlantic, heading towards the east coast of Florida. And as of yesterday, the models had it hitting sufficiently north of me that we weren't worried at all. And then yesterday, the models started turning a little bit south. Well, that's bad news for me. Look, no matter, you know, anywhere it hits is going to be bad. And I feel for anybody in the path of this storm. It doesn't look like a particularly large storm in terms of, you know, sheer size, mileage of it. But what's happening is it's slowing down. And it's reminding people of Harvey. Remember when Harvey hit the Houston area? Was it last year? It might have been the year before already. And it just sort of hit shore and stalled and sat there. Well, it has slowed down so much that they're basically doing the same thing now, that it's just they're anticipating it being a very, very wet storm, dumping a lot of water. Now, just to bring you up to speed where we are, I figured I'd show you one of the latest advisories. The National Hurricane Center puts out an advisory at 5 a.m., at 11 a.m. I believe there's one at 2 p.m., which I didn't see. There's one at 5 p.m., maybe at 8 p.m., definitely at 11 p.m. As we get closer to it making landfall, it will definitely mean at all of those. And you know, with each one right now, it's still days away. The storm isn't forecast to make landfall until now, probably late Monday, even into Tuesday morning. So any little minor movement, it could, you know, throw the whole trajectory off. So right now, it's forecast to hit West Palm Beach, basically make a direct hit on Mar-a-Lago, which wouldn't be a bad thing, except for the fact that I'm sure Donald Trump has federal flood insurance, which means you and I would pay for any repairs for any damage that happens there. It just sucks. Anyway, we will get to all of that. We're also going to, today is another auspicious anniversary I'll fill you in on in a little while, in case you're not already aware. And we have Frank Schaefer joining us. If you don't know who Frank Schaefer is, buckle in. Perhaps a couple of weeks ago, remember I had Jeff Charlotte on, the guy who wrote The Family and C Street, the books on which the Netflix series The Family were based on. And it tells about this freakishly weird religious almost cult that operates within Washington, D.C., and pretty much runs the show. Well, this is sort of a continuation of that. Frank Schaefer grew up as the son of Francis Schaefer, who was basically the Pope of the religious right movement. I'm gonna let Frank tell you about it. Yeah, I first met him, it was, I think, 11 years ago now, with the publication of his book called, Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. So, you know, it's so funny that I love talking to Frank Schaefer because I'm an atheist Jew. I mean, I grew up in a non-religious, a secular Jewish family, but I am fascinated by this subject. I really don't understand how in the 21st century, otherwise educated people believe in this mythology of some godlike, figure in the heavens controlling our destiny. I mean, it makes no sense to me. But Frank Schaefer brings another unique perspective on it. And on his blog at frankschaefer.com, he has a piece up that just spoke to me. It blew my mind. And it's titled, drumroll, Donald Trump is Surrounded by Jew-Hating Christian Zionists. I promise you, he holds nothing back. So we'll get to Frank Schaefer in a little bit. But I think we need it today, especially with a hurricane coming, especially with everything else we're going to talk about. So we will begin with, again, a bit of comedy. I was tempted to play the Randy Rainbow song again, Cheeto Christ Stupid Czar, because the subject matter really fits what we're going to be talking about today. And who knows? I may be tempted to bring it up again and play it before the show ends, or maybe at the end of the show as an extra bonus for those who want to stick around, because I'm not doing the broadcast today. So we'll see. We'll play it by ear, but it would fit today. But again, I didn't want to start the show 2 days in a row with the same comedy bit, even though it's even funnier the second time around. So we'll get there. But anyway, I thought we would start today. It's a bit from last year or the year before, I'm not quite sure, hurricane season, and it was Sarah Silverman talking about, a hurricane and climate change. You'll see. Take it away, Sarah.
Brittany, bitch. I'm kidding. It's me, Sarah. So I'm here in the studio. I'm getting ready for the show, and I just read the story where the Trump administration told oil and gas companies that they can be like a lot less careful about methane leaks because they're rolling back environmental regulations.
Yep.
Why would they do this? Well, I'll tell you, it's because they're in bed with big oil. Big oil invests massive amounts of money into the Republican Party. It's back scratching at the expense of human lives and the planet we live on as we release more and more gas into the air. And yes, I know you think I'm gonna make a fart joke, and I'm not. This is serious, you guys. Methane traps heat in the atmosphere 25 times more than carbon dioxide. It's a shitty gas. It's a shitty, shitty gas. Still not going to make a joke.
Right.
I'm a grown-up. I'm middle-aged. They're rolling back environmental regulations the same summer that the West Coast has been ravaged by forest fires. The same week, there's a major hurricane, Hurricane Florence, on the East Coast, which our president anticipates so eloquently here.
It's tremendously big and tremendously wet. Tremendous amounts of water.
What a dick. It sounds like he's describing a new ride at Six Flags. Like, why don't you redirect more FEMA money to pay for ICE detention centers again, you f***ing crappy president? Look, whether you believe that humans are causing climate change like 97% of the world's scientists do, or if you believe, like, God is punishing us for marriage equality or abortion or male rompers, we can all agree that this is not a good time to be gleefully celebrating environmental deregulation. Like, now oil and gas drilling companies can go up to 2 years between methane leak inspections. And yes, methane leaks sound like a term for farts. Ha, ha, ha. Get it out of your system. I'm just saying, whoever denies climate change is contributing to making the climate change. It's science. Mm. Whoever denied it supplied it. And that was a fart joke, but
yes,
it's the only one I'm gonna do.
Okay.
period.
Okay.
I'm just saying, you can't remain silent or it's gonna be deadly.
Ooh.
Okay, now I'm really done.
Yeah, she is.
I know that hate is a strong word, but the this administration pulls makes me
tremendously wet.
Ooh.
God damn it. Who is in the booth right now? I'll see you in a minute.
Sarah Silverman. And we need to give her a little bit of applause there. And sadly, her show, I Love You America, I think it's called, has been canceled by Hulu. But the nice thing about Hulu is they're all up there and available. Dwayne Nickerson in the YouTube chat room says, glad she didn't say queef. Okay, so that wasn't the most hysterical bit I've ever played here on the show, but it was, it was funny and it was topical for sure. And it's funny because, again, that was at least a year old, if not two. And she was talking about Trump rolling back methane regulations. Well, that just became law like this week. So it's infuriating. The planet is burning and, Donald Trump is doing everything he can to roll back environmental protections. All right. Well, speaking of climate change, here I am in Florida. And yes, we have Hurricane Dorian aiming right at us. Now, my family moved to Florida in 1971. I was 11 years old. Yeah, I turned 60 this year. In November, I'll be 60. And we moved from New York to Florida. It was, I remember it. It was June 25th, 1971. It was the day I graduated from my elementary school. We had our sixth grade graduation, and then we went to the airport and flew down here and, moved to Florida. Again, Florida, South Florida. We lived in Hollywood at the time, Broward County. And, we were always told, oh, hurricanes. Well, we went 20 years without a hurricane. Family moved here in 1971. I went away to school in, 77, 78. Still never had a hurricane. Moved to New York. Moved out to Los Angeles. And it was actually, I think it was 1991 or 1992. I was living in L.A. I was working at KLOS. And my father had a horrible accident. He was actually pushed. It's a long story that one of these days maybe I'll go into again. But long story short, he was pushed in his office by somebody he was firing. He went over a partition, hit his head on a desk, and spinal cord injury left him a quadriplegic. So for at least the first year or two after his accident, I was flying home from Los Angeles at two or three times a month. And it just so happened that I had a weekend planned to visit my dad the weekend that Hurricane Andrew hit here. That was the first major hurricane, or even minor hurricane. That was the first hit I ever experienced here in Florida. And again, my family lived here for over 20 years before experiencing a hurricane. Now, I moved back here in 2004, just as my daughter Allison was getting started in kindergarten. We moved here, a week before kindergarten began. And that year, if I remember correctly, we got hit with like three hurricanes in a row. And then it quieted down for a couple of years. But in the last few years, we're threatened by a storm every season. Last year, I don't remember the names anymore. They come and go. I think it was Michael. So we went through it, and we've been going through it. And now it seems like multiple times every year we're being threatened by a major storm. So, don't tell me there's no climate change. Having lived here in South Florida, even though I was gone for, 20 years in the middle there, I've seen it firsthand. So just to give you a taste of what we're experiencing, I'm going to share with you the 11 a.m. advisory from one of the local TV stations down here. It's the CBS affiliate, just because it was one I could pull off the web. But here's the latest advisory so you can see basically where we're at. Here we go. or here.
Advisory. Hurricane Dorian is still a Category 2 with max sustained winds of 110 miles an hour. And we are seeing that it is moving northwest still, however, a little slower at 10 miles an hour instead of 12 miles an hour. So that's a change from our previous advisory, as well as the fact that now we're seeing that it could be arriving later than anticipated. So as we take a look at the forecast track, the projected path, yes, likely becoming a Category 3, a major hurricane later today. Right. And then we'll have to wait and see when it makes that turn towards Florida, towards the Bahamas. But yes, as we get into Saturday evening, potentially a Category 4 hurricane headed towards the Bahamas as we head into the weekend. And by Monday evening, the Hurricane Center is still expecting Category 4 Hurricane Dorian to make landfall somewhere here along the east coast of Florida. Right now, it has a center possibly moving across portions of Palm Beach County, but it is still too soon to say. Notice that cone remains large, and it's shifted just slightly to the north, but we can't pay attention to that because we've been noticing those twists and turns, and we'll continue to see that. At least not until tonight or tomorrow, we'll know more. But with the level of uncertainty and the fact that pretty much anyone here across the state of Florida could be feeling the impacts, we all need to be prepared, obviously. And then Dorian is expected to move more northwest and north and right up the spine of the state and become a Category 1 by Wednesday.
Lovely.
But a slower moving storm hurricane, in fact, could mean the potential for tremendous rain, flash flooding, also the threat for storm surge and coastal flooding as we have the king tides. Here's a look at the satellite image, and notice that Iowa, an indication that, yes, it is continuing to intensify and forecast to become a major hurricane. The computer models tightly packed together in agreement that Dorian will move northwest and then west, but will it be more of a west-northwest turn or more direct west path? We'll have to wait and see. But right now, many of the models are keeping it moving west, but then some moving northwest. Of course, we'll have more coming up at noon.
So that was the 11 a.m. advisory from the local CBS TV affiliate. Where those, you know, all those lines have the storm hitting, I live right below that. But that's good news in a sense, because the way a hurricane spins counterclockwise, so it spins east to west, all right, and the top side of the storm, if you're on the top or the left side of the storm where it's hitting you, it's coming at you, that's what they call the dirty side. That's the ugly side. That's where you don't want to be. You're better off being to the south of the storm than to the north of the storm. So I'm looking at it positively. We're still to the south of the storm, even though it seems to be trending in our direction. But we're on the less dangerous side. So it looks like a direct hit coming at us. I've gotten so many emails this morning, you wouldn't believe. But it looks like we're going to stay put. We're not going to evacuate. We'll be here, taking our chances, but preparing. So that's the story there. I was out this morning. Yes, I live in the town of Coral Springs in Broward County, which is northwestern Broward County. We're just south of Boca Raton, which is southwestern Palm Beach County. So we're right on the, just below the Palm Beach County line. Again, it's a very slow-moving storm. But if we're going to have to take almost a direct hit, better to be underneath it where I am than above it, say, where Mar-a-Lago is, just saying. Anyway, so I was out this morning. I had a doctor's appointment. If you watch on YouTube, you might notice a different camera angle today. That's because I'm a cancer survivor. Yes, 3 years ago today, just to bring it all together, I had surgery. 3 years ago today, I was in the hospital having the lower lobe, the lower lobe of my left lung fully removed, and what's called a wedge resection of the upper lobe because there was another tumor up there. Yes, I had lung cancer. So it was 3 years ago today that I had surgery. So, and thankfully, we caught it nice and early, so I didn't need radiation. I didn't need chemo. And I am now, knocking on wood laminate, 3 years cancer-free. But I'm also a survivor of melanoma. Yeah, I grew up here in South Florida. I noticed somebody in the chat room wrote about Hollywood Beach. That was my beach growing up. And we were there every, you know, we were the sun worshipers. And back in those days, we didn't wear sunscreen. We wore baby oil and used reflectors. And, you know, those of you who watch the show on YouTube, you know, I don't get it, but, you know, whatever. You might have noticed a little, like a lesion on the tip of my nose. Well, that's where I had a squamous cell carcinoma removed a few years ago. A few years before that, I had a malignant melanoma removed from my leg. Well, now, this morning, I had a little biopsy done on my right cheek, on my face, where there's another spot. So anyway, today's, you know, cancer freedom day for me, 3 years cancer free. But, you know, you got to be diligent, especially living in Florida and having being a, you know, melanoma survivor, too. So I had that done. But while I was out, I noticed two phenomenons at gas stations. Either they were empty and dead because they were sold out, or they had long lines. My husband, David, who does most of our shopping, is he braved Costco today. Luckily, he got gas yesterday. It is nuts down here. People are bracing for the storm. But anyway, so all that going on. Yeah, so 3 years cancer-free, watching for little spots as we get older. It happens. And a hurricane coming. What could possibly go wrong? Well, there's always what's happening in the news. Shall we get to what's news? I guess. Well, you know what? We'll do it live because what I put out as the official new what's news segment that runs on YouTube on Progressive Voices is 6 minutes because they need it that length. The one I podcast. And if you subscribe to the Nicole Sandler Show podcast, you get What's News, too. It's longer today. I thought, because I put together so much news, I can only use so much in the 6 minutes. So I figured I'll start podcasting the longer newscast to give you more information. But so let's do it. We're figuring, you know, we got news to cover. So we'll start there.
I read the news today, oh boy.
And we'll do it live. Do it live! I can't even find my Bill O'Reilly. Oh, there he is.
We'll do it live.
Do
fucking
it live.
Thing.
Okay.
Right. We'll do it live.
Yeah. Okay. So my first story is all about the hurricane. Already went there. So let's move on. We'll move on to Joe Biden. Oh, he did it again. I need to get that Britney Spears. I'm so not a Britney Spears fan, but I know the song. Oops, I did it again. Yeah. That's all I know of it. But there you go. Joe Biden. I can't make. Let me just read to you as the Washington Post tells it. As he campaigns for president, Joe Biden tells a moving but false war story. Yes, almost every detail in the story appears to be incorrect, they write. Based on interviews with more than a dozen U.S. troops, their commanders, and Biden campaign officials, it appears as though the former vice president has jumbled elements of at least three actual events into one story of bravery, compassion, and regret that never happened. Here's CNN's report on it.
It's a powerful story former Vice President Joe Biden tells on the campaign trail, including just 6 days ago. But according to the Washington Post, it's actually a story that's made up of three different events that Biden has conflated into a single incident. Take a listen. Mm.
I've been in and out of Afghanistan and Iraq over 30 times. I pinned medals on, silver stars on soldiers up in the upper Konar Valley in the middle of a firestorm the poor guys have gone through. Young Navy captain, Navy,
what?
Up in the mountains in the Konar Valley in Afghanistan. One of his buddies got shot, fell down a ravine about 60 feet. Four-star general asked me whether I'd go up into the FOB. Now, everybody got concerned, a vice president going up in the middle of this, but we can lose a vice president. We can't lose many more of these kids. Not a joke. This guy climbed down a ravine, carried this guy up on his back under fire, and the general wanted me to pin the silver star on him. I got up there and stand. It's the God's truth. My word is a Biden.
What?
Wait, he stood at attention.
We'll come back
I went to
that.
Pin him. I said, sir, I don't want the damn thing. Do not pin it on me, sir. Please, sir. Do not do that. He died.
The Washington Post found that Biden was a senator, not the vice president, when he visited Kunar province, Afghanistan, in 2008. Okay. The service member honored in that instance was an Army specialist, not a Navy captain, and Biden did not pin the medal on him. Biden did award the Bronze Star to then Staff Sergeant Chad Workman in 2011 for his heroic actions in Afghanistan. Biden responded to the Charleston Post and Courier late this afternoon, saying, quote, "I don't understand what they're talking about, but the central point is it was absolutely accurate what I said. The story was that he refused the medal because the fella tried to save and risked his life saving, died. That's the beginning, middle, and end. The rest of you guys can take it and do what you want with it."
But it's not true, and that's the thing. And he doubles down on it by saying this.
It's the God's truth. My word is a Biden.
It's the God's truth. My word as a Biden? What the fuck does that mean?
Go to Joe 30330.
Joe
30330. Go to Joe 30330.
Here are a few important suggestions for the use of your dial telephone. Before calling any number, first secure the number from your new directory. Then remove the receiver and listen for the dial tone. It sounds like this. That tone indicates everything is ready for your call. With the receiver off the hook, dial the desired number. For example, suppose you want to dial 23650. Dial each numeral in this manner, pulling the dial around to the finger stop each time.
Funny.
Be sure to allow the dial to freely return to its normal position. And this is the ringing signal.
Joe, 30330.
Couldn't resist it. Sorry. All right. It's hard to go from that to this, but there's more stories of more misery at border concentration camps. According to a letter sent to acting DHS secretary yesterday, the Department of Homeland Security has prevented congressional staffers from the House Oversight Committee from visiting additional migrant detention facilities along the southern border after making just troubling discoveries in recent weeks at other detention centers. The chairman of the group, a Democrat Elijah Cummings, wrote that in the past 2 weeks, a bipartisan group of committee staffers made visits to several facilities and heard concerning allegations from detainees. After those visits, they were barred from conducting a second trip to see 11 additional facilities. But, and here it just makes your stomach turn, migrant detainees told committee staffers that toddlers, including an infant held at Customs and Border Patrol facilities, were being fed burritos as opposed to age-appropriate foods. A toddler and an infant given a burrito? And a child was told by a CBP agent to drink spilled soup off the floor before she could get more food. Additionally, the detainees said children were held in cold rooms without the appropriate clothing, parents weren't given enough diapers for young children, and they were pressured into signing documents in English without translation, all according to Cummings' letter. On top of all that, we're now hearing reports of mumps outbreaks at that swept through 57 of these immigration detention facilities in 19 states since September. Lovely, right? And wait, there's more. A new lawsuit was filed yesterday by 19 states, and it reveals details from migrant children who told investigators that they were held in rooms too small to sit down in, were repeatedly woken through the night by roll calls, and were made to fight for food that guards threw on the floor. This hurts my heart to read this to you. One young woman told lawyers from Washington State, who is part of this lawsuit, that menstruating young girls were permitted only one tampon or one sanitary pad a day. After that, at least one girl, quote, had no choice but to continue to wear her soiled underwear and clothes. This is disgusting. But it brings me to, and we're going to get to Frank Schaefer in a minute, but it's a perfect segue. There's an op-ed in today's New York Times written by a guy named Timothy Egan, who's a contributing opinion writer. And the subject, the headline reads, "Why People Hate Religion." The subheadline is, "The charlatans and phonies preen and punish, while those of real faith do Christ's work among refugees." And it's an interesting point they make, because I've said this so many times over the years. I'm an atheist Jew, and I'm more, quote, Christian than these zealots who, you know, wear their Christianity on their sleeves. So it goes on. This op-ed tells us about a nun. It says she's not a wacko, a hypocrite, a sexual predator, or a political operative. Her life's work, she says, is guided by seeing the presence of God in migrant children in the shelter she oversees in the Rio Grande Valley. So he's talking about, you don't hear about people like that. He says what you hear about is the phonies, the charlatans who wave Bibles, the theatrically pious, and they are legion. Vice President Mike Pence wears his faith like a fluorescent orange vest. But when he visited the border this summer and saw human beings crammed like cordwood in the Texas heat, that faith was invisible. Pence is the chief bootlicker to a president who now sees himself in messianic terms, a president who tweets a description of himself as, quote, the second coming of God. As hard as it is to see God Part Two boasting about grabbing a woman's genitals, paying hush money to a porn actress, or calling neo-Nazis, quote, very fine people, millions of overtly religious Americans believe in some version of Jesus Trump superstar. Again, that's part of this op-ed that's in the New York Times today. And, you know, that's why the Randy Rainbow, Cheeto Christ, Stupid Czar would have been the perfect comedy bit to play today. But such as it is. I'll tell you what, let's get Frank Schaefer on the line, because there is so much to talk to him about. And he is notably pissed. And you can't blame him. Again, for those of you who don't know, Frank Schaefer is a New York Times bestselling author of more than a dozen books, including the one that brought him to my attention more than 10 years ago, called Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. I'm looking. Uh-oh, he's not there. We'll try him back again in a minute. Uh-oh. Let me finish the intro, and then we'll try to call him back again. He's also an artist, a filmmaker, and his bio tells us that he's a survivor of both polio and an evangelical fundamentalist childhood. And it's that evangelical and fundamentalist childhood that, you know, really makes him an expert on, you know, what we're talking about today. I'm actually trying a different, I'm trying his cell phone. That number doesn't work anymore. All right, let's try this one again. Okay, and see if we can't raise Frank Schaefer. Anyway, he's got this post up at frankschaefer.com that I will link to from my blog, nicolesandler.com, where I will post the interview. Come on, Frank Schaefer, I know you got to be there. It's called, is he there?
Hello.
Hey, Frank, it's Nicole Sandler calling. How you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're live on the air. I was just explaining to listeners a little bit about, you know, who you are. For those who don't know you, talking about your background as, the son of Francis Schaefer, and how it makes you kind of uniquely qualified to comment on the frightening religious zealotry surrounding and supporting this president, this guy who is the unlikely man sitting in the Oval Office today. So you wrote a post a few days ago at frankschaefer.com titled, "Donald Trump is Surrounded by Jew-Hating Christian Zionists." And I can't thank you enough for this article because, well, as an American and an American Jew, I was deeply offended by Trump's, I guess the way I can explain it, call it, is goy-splaining to Jews about who we should vote for. To refresh people's memories, Frank, this is what Donald Trump said.
"In my opinion, you vote for a Democrat, you're being very disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel. And only weak people would say anything other than that."
So he stepped in really weird territory here. So Frank Schaefer, when you first heard that, what was your initial reaction?
Well, one thing is that, of course, you know, I have to laugh a little bit at the way you put it, because, you know, to say that Donald Trump stepped into weird territory is kind of like saying water is wet.
That's true. And he tells us it is.
He's not stepping into weird territory.
Yeah, that's very true.
But yeah, in all seriousness, I mean, look, my background, my father was an evangelical leader, as you've explained to your listeners, and I was kind of his nepotistic sidekick in the 70s and 80s. And unfortunately, our family bears a lot of responsibility for Trump being in the White House, in that my dad and I and Dr. Sievert Koop, who was Ronald Reagan's Surgeon General, made the abortion issue the litmus test for evangelicals. Before that, most evangelicals were pro-choice, which is something most people haven't even thought about.
No.
And as was Ronald Reagan, who legalized abortion in California before he changed his mind. But in the Southern Baptist Convention, for instance, Dr. Criswell, who was the president of the Southern Baptist Convention and was also the pastor of First Baptist in Dallas, which, by the way, is where Pastor Jeffress is now, who's one of Trump's big supporters.
Sure.
He was so pro-choice that he would argue with my dad when we made our anti-abortion film. The reason I'm talking about that is that the shift in the evangelical world into becoming a kind of Trump cult has taken yet another step away from where most evangelicals used to be, which was that they didn't regard their faith as political. They regarded it as a matter of personal faith. They believed that Jesus had saved them from their sins, that they would go to heaven and so forth, but not that if you voted for Democrats or someone that you disagreed with, you were an evil person, and all that has shifted now. So where we find ourselves today is with an evangelical movement that is not only highly politicized, but is more Zionist than perhaps any Zionist in Israel, except for some of those in the settler movement. But they're not Zionist in the sense of being pro-Jewish. They are Zionist in the same way that a pedophile on the edge of a school is waiting to meet students and loves kids, quote unquote, but it is because he or she is grooming them for a totally ulterior motive. And I know that's hard for people to get their heads around, but you've got to understand that one of the basic tenets of evangelical faith that I grew up with, for instance, my mom drummed into me from the time I was knee high, was that one of the great miracles of God was the return to Israel by the Jews, the coming of Israeli statehood in 1948, that this fulfilled prophecy. And why she was so excited about this wasn't because this was going to help any Jews. It was because it fulfilled New Testament biblical Christian prophecy, which says that when Jesus comes back, Israel will be utterly destroyed. Only 144,000 will be saved out of the Jews who are in Israel. And that we Christians, in other words, white evangelicals, because this was a matter of evangelical faith, not so much in the Roman Catholic tradition, will then rule on earth. So that when you see a guy like Mike Pence, for instance, or Ralph Reed, or Jerry Falwell Jr., or Franklin Graham, getting all excited about the embassy move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, or when you see them basically approving Donald Trump urging the right-wing Israeli government to annex all the occupied territories, or when you see them rejoicing in our hostility towards Iran as Israel's sworn enemy. This has nothing to do with supporting Jews or even liking Jews. This has to do with a fulfillment of prophecy that when it comes to pass, if evangelicals are correct in their views, which of course they're not, this is a fantasy, but they believe they are, they sincerely believe that what they are doing is paving the way for the return of Christ. And the first thing that happens in terms of evangelical theological eschatology of the end times is the utter destruction of the state of Israel. And that is that has to happen before believing Christians can rule on earth with Jesus for 1,000 years before the coming of the new heaven and new earth. So you've got to see that if you know what evangelical theology is all about, to mistake Christian Zionism for support of Jewish people or even the state of Israel long term is, and I'm not being facetious here, literally like thinking that when a pedophile tells you that he likes children,
right,
he means the same thing that I mean when I talk about my grandchildren.
Right.
No, he doesn't.
They're two
He's
different
grooming
things.
Them for something else.
Right.
So, I don't think the Jewish community in America has understood the fact that if their best friends in the evangelical community who are pushing Trump to unconditionally support Israeli policy, no matter what, that's coming from the right wing in Israel, for instance, that is confusing that with support for Israel as a kind of open-ended endorsement of Jewish people and Jewish statehood is absurd. These folks are totally anti-Semitic in a very basic sense. And that is, look, you and I, Nicole, are friends.
Right.
I don't think we would remain friends if you really believed and understood that one of the basic tenets upon which I built my life is a theological belief system that not only believes you're going to burn in hell forever
right.
because you didn't accept Jesus as your personal savior, but that the state of Israel's purpose on earth is to be offered up as a kind of final burnt offering, literally a last holocaust, in terms of the fulfillment of biblical prophecy when Jesus comes back. And one last thing. These evangelicals don't think Jesus is coming back 10,000 years from now or 100 years from now. The whole theology of the evangelical movement right now, and one of the reasons they support Donald Trump, is they believe we're in the end times right now.
Wow.
So that cousin of yours living in Israel is going to go up in smoke. And these are the same folks whose theology believes that the little girl who was gassed in Auschwitz, burnt in the oven,
yeah.
woke up in hell burning forever because she hadn't accepted Jesus.
Oh, my God.
So I'm speaking harshly here, but I think we need a hard, cold dose of reality to understand that when Trump said what he said, he wasn't talking to Jews.
Right.
He was talking to his evangelical white base of support. And essentially, if you really listen to what he was saying something completely different. And that is, if I lose the election, it's those Jews that did it, and their disloyalty will cost us, white American Christians, evangelical Christians, and those who support me. He was not addressing his remarks to Jews. He didn't think that one Jew was going to vote for him because he was threatened with being disloyal.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what he was saying to folks like Ralph Reed and Pastor Jeffress and Franklin Graham and these others. He was sending them a coded message saying, hey, boys, our real enemy here is the same enemy we've always had, we being right-wing Republican white nationalists, the same kind of people who say we will not be replaced when
right.
they march in torch.
Jews will not replace us.
The message
right.
he's sending mm-hmm. to them is you know who to blame if this all goes south. If I don't get elected, it's those Jews did it. And that is a message that he has harped on before with all his weird racialist comments. Trump has a race, not just racism. He is a racialist. He's got a weird thing that goes back into when he and his dad were denying black people access to apartments.
Right.
But he's always making flip remarks about Jews and their money and who they should vote for, and that he's there. He retweets comments about the fact that he's the new Messiah to Jews, that he's like the son of God.
Yeah.
To them. He can't leave this alone.
Right.
So Trump himself mirrors a kind of a patronizing anti-Semitism, but the folks he's really talking to, and I want to say it again, is to his white evangelical supporters, wink, wink, nod, nod. Look, we know who to blame if this goes wrong. It's those Jews. And he hasn't done the Jewish community any favor.
But he's got, you know, his daughter is allegedly Jewish, and Jared Kushner is supposedly an Orthodox Jew. They're not, but, they claim to be. What do you make of their silence amidst all of this? I guess it's blasphemy.
The same thing that I make of the silence of Ivanka Trump,
mm-hmm.
who has not spoken up,
nope.
knowing full well that there are 13 and 14-year-old girls in cages, bleeding through their underwear
yep.
and skirts and jeans, sitting in pools of blood on the floor because these bastards who are running the Trump administration give them one sanitary pad a day when they have their period.
I just did that
story. And where's Ivanka speaking up on this as yep. a woman, God
exactly.
damn her.
Yep.
And where are Trump's Jewish grandchildren?
Yep.
Where's his son-in-law? They are all part of the the system here with Trump. These people, sadly, just like there are women who are betraying women by voting for Trump, there are Jews who are betraying Jews by voting for Trump, and he's got people in his own family. Why? Because he is a cult figure.
Yes.
And people who are part of a cult give up. Speaking of loyalties, they give up their ordinary common sense and decency. So you've got women who support Trump, who talk about pro-life values, and there are kids locked in cages and they're not saying anything. You've got girls bleeding through their jeans, 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds bleeding through their jeans, sitting in a cage, and you've got his daughter who says nothing.
Right.
So the fact that there are a couple of people in his family who are Jewish means nothing because he's a cult figure.
Right. Frank Schaefer is with us. He's an author. He's an artist. He's a film director. But most, I mean, he grew up in ensconced in the religious right. In fact, the formation of the religious right, he was one of the, his father was basically considered the Pope of the religious right movement. So you grew up surrounded by all these people. I got to ask that one of the first more disturbing moments of many in this administration was, I guess it was, I don't recall the date exactly, but it was a couple of days before Trump decided to name something a National Day of Prayer. And he had a bunch of these evangelical so-called leaders in the Oval Office surrounding him where they prayed and laid their hands on him. Do you recall that moment? Because it was frightening.
Yeah, absolutely. And absolutely. And the thing is, the weird thing from that moment is that, you know, half the women around that table are people I knew back in the day, the older ones, that is. And so, you know, for me, it's sort of deja vu all over again, because back when we were working with Ronald Reagan and Gerry Ford and the two Bush presidents and this kind of thing, you know, my family was hock deep, not only in the religious right, but had access to the White House. My mother used to stay there when Gerald Ford was president, swim in Betty Ford's pool. They were best friends. And, you know, I've got a folder with handwritten letters from everybody from Ronald Reagan to both Bush presidents and so forth about my family and my father when he passed away. You know, we were very tight with them. So I know exactly the lure of this kind of access to power and the adrenaline rush this gives you. But what these evangelicals have done is literally sell out their own beliefs for access to power. Look, you know, when you think of the unspeakable cruelty of the Trump regime and you realize that he is in power because there are evangelicals who kept him there and voted for him on the basis of him being a quote unquote pro-life president, you understand the kind of bitter irony of what we've come to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at his comments to the Jewish community saying, look, if you're loyal, you'll vote for me. He's not really talking about loyalty to Israel. He's talking about loyalty to himself. That's all that counts for Trump, because he is not just a pathological liar, but he's egomaniacal to the core. So his message there was, again, as I said before, to the white evangelical supporter and essentially telling them, look, you are better Jews than the Jews are, because 77% of them are voting for Democrats. At least you all vote for me.
Aye.
Weirdly enough, that fits in with another part of evangelical theology, which is that since the Jews didn't accept Jesus, they're no longer real Jews. That Christians who believe in Jesus are the actual chosen people now. That is straight out of the book of any evangelical theological school will tell you that. That's the view. So, you know, when the Jewish community takes comfort in the fact that right-wing Republicans seem to back Israel, and they think that somehow protects them from the racism you saw
right
in the We Will Not Be Replaced torchlit parade, which mm-hmm. looks like something that happened in Weimar, Germany, you know, in the early 1930s. It doesn't even look American. You know, the Jewish community is deluding itself. If there's anybody out there who actually thinks this is going to be good for Israel in the end, let alone good for individual Jews in America.
Of course.
Where you have this same president stirred up the kind of hatred where you've got somebody sending bombs to members of Congress, pipe bombs,
yep.
and another person going into a synagogue and gunning people down.
Yep.
That's what's actually happening in the Trump presidency. The rest of it is just window dressing for white evangelicals to keep them on board.
Right. Now,
and again, it's not because Trump supports Israel. It's because he wants the white evangelical vote.
Right.
Trump doesn't support Israel at all. Who supports Israel are white evangelicals, and he's keeping them on board by throwing them these crumbs and saying, hey, I'm more loyal to Israel than these Jews who vote for Democrats are. So you got to understand, the whole thing is just another Trump con. It's right up there with his casinos and his airline and his stakes and all the rest of it.
Absolutely. But here's my question. I believe that these religious leaders are as cynical and corrupt as he is, because they found this guy who I guess they figured was malleable. He got up. It was in January of 2016, so it was still almost a year out from Election Day when he spoke at Liberty University. Now, again, all my religious training, my knowledge of the Old Testament comes from watching the Ten Commandments on TV, and my knowledge of the New Testament comes from Jesus Christ Superstar. So that shows the extent of my religious knowledge. But when I saw this clip, even I knew that Donald Trump had probably never picked up the Bible when he said this.
We're going to protect Christianity. And I can say that. I don't have to be politically correct or... We're going to protect it, you know? And I asked Jerry and I asked some of the folks, because I hear this is a major theme right here, but 2 Corinthians, right? Huh? 2 Corinthians 3:17. That's the whole ballgame. Where the
laughing.
Spirit of the Lord, right? Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And here there is Liberty College, but Liberty University. But it is so true. You know, when you think, and that's really... Is that the one? Is that the one you like? I think that's the one you like, because I loved it, and it's so representative.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry. He sounds like a moron, like the moron that he is. All those people in the audience are religious scholars. Why didn't they boo him out of the room and say, this guy is a phony?
Yeah, well, I can ask the same question when he goes to Israel and marches around with their leaders.
Yep.
Why isn't he booed out of the room when he's been playing games with the white supremacists? Let me just phrase this again. This is the president. Trump represents the white supremacist evangelical movement in America that believes every single Jew who dies today anywhere in the world will burn in hell tonight.
God.
That's who he represents. That's who voted him into office. Vladimir Putin did not put him in office.
Right.
Whatever went on with Russia.
Okay.
Hillary Clinton, was not a good candidate, but she did not put him in office.
No.
There's only one thing that if you take out of the Trump puzzle makes him not president, and that's the white evangelical, white supremacist vote, period.
Right.
So for the Jewish community, for him to march around at AIPAC and say, I'm the guy and I'm on your side, for him to be in Israel marching around saying, you should love me, I'm the second coming of God here, I'm your Messiah somehow, for him to be telling Jews how to vote for him based on loyalty to Israel is right up there with, it only is matched by one other thing, and that is the cynicism of the evangelical leadership. I know Franklin Graham personally. I know Ralph Reed personally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these guys are people I grew up with.
Yeah.
Let me explain something to you. Not one of them actually believes what they're saying in public right now. These guys are simply out for the power, and the ones who are not in office are out for the fundraising. Their people, the people who follow them, some of them are genuinely sincere and misled and deluded and all the rest of it, but the leadership is totally cynical. So in Trump, they have one of their own. Con art. So when you look at a guy like Ralph Reed and you realize that he should have been in jail for his deal he cut with the casinos 20 years ago and narrowly escaped prosecution, when you look at all the history of these charlatans, like Jerry Falwell Jr. and his whole affair with this pool boy and waving a gun around from the pulpit of a church at his college telling the students to arm in case the Muslims come to the campus, all these stunts these guys pull. These flagrant kind of con artist type stunts are all only one thing. It's about the fundraising in their own community and keeping the heat up and keeping the anger up and all the rest of it. Trump totally gets that. These guys get each other.
But
basically, they wind their people up to vote for Trump. He winds them up and these very sadly deluded folks follow along. But the leadership itself is made up in the evangelical world of con artists exactly cut in the mold of Trump. He would have been a great evangelical television preacher.
Well, he kind of is. Again, we're speaking with Frank Schaefer, and this discussion was prompted by an essay Frank wrote. It's at his frankschaeferblog.com called Donald Trump is Surrounded by Jew-Hating Christian Zionists. And I want to read this paragraph. You write, Trump is surrounded by white extremist messianic evangelicals. Mike Pence, John Bolton, Sarah Sanders, Mike Pompeo, Betsy DeVos, Mick Mulvaney, and many others. You write, they are Jew-hating, but Israel-loving Christian Zionists. They apply to Jews the same thinkings they apply to gays, whom they say they, quote, love. They say they, quote, love the sinner but hate the sin. They also love Israel but hate and fear Jews. This is, do you think they're set? I believe, look, we saw Donald Trump before Election Day in 2016 float the idea that if, you know, if he should lose, well, it's because the election was rigged and, you know, he trusts his followers to, you know, do the right thing. Basically, he was suggesting unrest. From what I'm hearing you saying, it sounds like they're setting it up that if he loses this time, they're setting it up to blame the Jews.
Yeah, well, you got to see something. Every time these guys use the word liberal or fake news,
right?
Hey, who are the liberals in America? They're Jews in the minds of the religious right. Those Jews in New York, the Jews that run the New York Times, the Jews that control everything, the big money.
Yep.
You know, look, I don't have to spin this out for you. It's part and parcel of the fabric of America. It's the way people think. It's the way the white evangelicals think. Those people in the cities, the countryside of the true American, you know, living out somewhere versus this sophisticated elite in our cities. All of these are basically metaphors for something else, and that is being taken over by outsiders. They will not replace us. Who are we talking about? So when you look at the bigger picture, genuinely, if you looked at their rhetoric when they use the word liberal or you use the word fake news or all these conspiracy theories about the deep state, if you put the word Jew in there or Jewish people or Jewish organization, and instead of the metaphors that are used, you would have just one anti-Semitic, fear-filled screed after another pouring from the mouths of these people. So then when they turn around and say they support the state of Israel, and you dig into the theology and you realize that it is because they think this is going to hasten the return of Jesus, who then turns around and kills all the Jews for not believing in him, you know, a very ugly picture emerges. And I think it needs to be said, and it needs to be said plainly, and it needs to be said loudly. And we cannot fool around with these folks who get misty-eyed and say they just love Jews and they love Israel.
Right.
Ask them about their theology.
Mm-hmm.
Where will I be if I get hit by a car today? Ask them about what they think the fate of Israel is when Jesus comes back. Ask them why they always are going after liberals and the media when those words are interchangeable with white American evangelicals' misapprehensions about who runs everything. You know, it really is a very clear picture. It's just that it's kind of horrible. And we don't want to face it. We don't want to be honest about it.
Right. I don't know if you've seen it or not yet today, Frank Schaefer, but there's an op-ed in today's New York Times written by Timothy Egan called Why People Hate Religion. But it's exactly
what... Yes, I just read it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's so good. Basically talking about the hypocrisy here that, you know, we're told that, you know, Jesus says, take care of the least among us. And yet we have a group of people running the government who are, telling sick migrant children that they're going to be deported, telling people seeking asylum that they're not welcome here. This is totally anti-Christian, quote, behavior.
Right.
Yeah. So
yes, it's not only anti-Christian, it is fundamentally anti-Semitic once again, because of course the whole thrust of huge chunks of the Old Testament are to welcome the stranger amongst you.
Right.
And to the point where people like Adolf Hitler and other fascist instigators, Mussolini and the rest of them, would point to their disagreements with Christianity. It was always this idea that somehow, beginning in the Old Testament, idea of welcoming strangers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There was this kind of religious weakness, and we have to get back to that. And it has to be the survival of the fittest and the strength of the survivor over the weak. You know, this has been the whole anti-Jewish and anti-Christian thrust of fascism through history.
Right.
So, you know, we're just up against it again.
Wow.
We're up against the same people who are now saying, look, it doesn't matter what Jesus said. The point is here, you know, they will not replace us. It's time to get strong. So Trump's dealing with guys like Jerry Falwell Jr., who, I just say again, waved a handgun that he pulled out of the waistband of his pants in the pulpit of his own chapel.
Wow.
And urged his students to get open carry permits in case they come here. That is the mentality we're dealing with. So these are not folks who are friendly to people who believe in reason and science and discussion and creativity and all the rest of it. And of course, since the Jewish community in America is associated with science, reason, education, creativity, and all those things that the evangelical white supremacists find so threatening, including integration and all the rest of it, that's the whole story. So when you look at a guy like Trump, you got to understand that, you know, when he takes out a full page ad in the New York Times falsely condemning and calling for the arrest and a death penalty for kids who were lied about and set up by the police and later completely exonerated, the Central Park incident and so on. He knows perfectly well that the civil rights people who went and fought for civil rights in the U.S. often were Jews. He knows
right.
perfectly well that he's on the other side of the historical spectrum. And so does the American religious right wing, the evangelical people who voted for him. So it isn't that this has all just happened now. It's that he has cashed in on it. And of course, their big cover for their anti-Semitism is we're pro-Israel.
Yeah.
So how can you be both? Well, of course you can, because the reason they're pro-Israel, and I say it again, is the same reason that a pedophile says he likes children.
Right.
He's grooming them for an entirely different purpose. And I think one problem in the Jewish community, if I may say so,
mm-hmm.
is that because Jews have not been raised within the cult of white evangelicalism, they don't understand that those beliefs are serious.
Right.
This isn't something where you pay to go to a holy holiday once or twice a year, and that's your commitment to your religion. And this is a deal where, you know, it's three meetings a week, and the basis of those meetings are all the imminent return of Jesus and the destruction of Israel being part of it. This isn't like some peripheral thing that only gets mentioned on some high holiday once a year. This is like the bedrock of where these folks are coming from, which is an apocalyptic view of history in which the Jews are the sacrificial lamb. And so for a lot of these guys, they've heard sermons in their church saying that the Holocaust was just basically a forerunning, a kind of a trial run, a warning, you know, one more warning from God to turn to Jesus. And that, you know, this was kind of the Jews' last chance.
Wow.
I'm not kidding when I say people have grown up with those teachings.
Yep.
And so I don't think the American Jewish community has a clue about the white supremacist evangelical movement and where their heartbeat really is when it comes to how they see Jews and how they see Israel.
Well, hopefully they're listening now. Frank Schaefer, we're out of time, but I can't thank you enough for this conversation and for the article you wrote. I will post links to that and your books on my blog at NicoleSandler.com. Truly appreciate your expertise and your authority on this subject, because it's something that everybody needs to hear. Thank you so much.
Hey, always good. Thanks, Nicole.
All right. You take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. Frank Schaefer, everybody. Again, I will put links to his article and his books and everything on the blog at NicoleSandler.com. He is a national treasure. Obviously, we're running late. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. I hope to be back on Tuesday. If I'm not here Tuesday, if you wind up hearing last Tuesday's show on Progressive Voices, it means we got a direct hit by the hurricane and I have no power. Otherwise, I'll see you Tuesday. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. All right. I promised if we had time, we would end with, because it's the perfect comedy bit for today. I know we started with it yesterday, but we'll end the show with it again today. It's the latest, the new one from Randy Rainbow. I leave you with Cheeto Christ, Stupid Czar. Happy Labor Day, everyone. Bye.
It is a special day indeed, as I am joined now by the divine Miss T, our Lord and Savior, King of the Jews. Am I leaving anything out?
Brilliant, great.
Don't push it. Donald Trump, you have had a busy few days. G7 meetings, ongoing trade wars with China. Bedbugs.
Fake news.
Let's see. You also sent out a controversial tweet saying that you are the King of Israel and told a group of reporters that you are the chosen one. How you doing? You okay?
The news about me is largely phony.
Mr. Not My President, you're acting quite bizarre. Ruling like a loon behind your Twitter avatar. Of all your recent antics, this latest one's a pearl. Now it seems you think you're God. Okay. Whatever, girl. Your crazy's on full display. Wish you'd just go away. Take a vacay, hun. I hear that Greenland's nice this time of year. Dreaming of walls while the stock market falls. And now you're shaming the Jews. You say you're the chosen one, and I know what you mean. Chosen by the Russian Kremlin in 2016. When will this maniacal messiah complex pass? I hereby order you to get your head out of your ass. And just keep selling us lies and attacking allies. Go on, you king of fake news.
It's fake news. It's disgusting fake news. I read a front page story in the Washington Post.
You're making no sense, bitch. Why are you still talking? It's making me nauseous. Everything you say is bullshit. Yes, everything's lies.
I don't think anybody's done more than me.
Close your mouth, and delete all your socials tonight.
The president has said he is the king of the Jews. The second coming of God. The chosen one.
He's not really interested in helping mankind. When it comes to Bible study, he's way behind. He can't walk on water or give sight to the blind. But he can change a falsehood to a fact with his mind. When they crucify him in the news, he starts stripping. And he kinda speaks in tongues when his dentures start slipping.
Jito Christ, he's like if Jesus were pumpkin spice. Jito Christ, stupid czar. That tangerine-colored commissar.
Wow, he prefers profanity to biblical psalms. But he can stop a hurricane with nuclear bombs.
No!
He's praised by his disciples, though they've all been misled. And somehow he brought Mitch McConnell back from the dead.
Ew.
He golfs on Sunday, so at church he's not in attendance. And he makes 25 seem like the Christmas of amendments. He calls himself the second coming, I would have done. But according to these porn stars, he could not even come once. Don't you get it wrong?
Don't you get it wrong?
Don't you get it wrong?
Get it wrong.
Give him what he wants
Give
now.
What he wants.
Don't get it wrong.
Don't get it wrong. Jito Christ. Jito Christ, he's like if Jesus were pumpkin spice. Jito Christ, stupid czar, that tangerine colored commissar.
I think I'm doing a great job.
Don't you get it wrong?
Jito Christ,
don't you get it wrong?
Jito Christ,
let me hear you sing now.
His country when he's enticed.
Don't get it wrong.
Jito Christ, stupid czar, who in the hell do you think you are?
God,
clearly. Well, it is a special day indeed.